Are you tired yet? A week and a half into Lent. Have you fallen short on your sacrifice, your resolution? We still have a month left in this Lent, and the burden of having to stick to it can be maybe a little discouraging. Can you imagine then the mental weight being carried by the apostles? Just 6 days prior, Peter boldly proclaimed that Jesus is the Son of God, only to have his excitement dashed to the ground by a bizarre promise that the God-man he had recognized would die, and die a horrible, shameful death with every appearance of failure. Even at the moment Jesus prophesies his own death, the apostles pretend not to hear. And Peter goes so far as to rebuke his Lord. But Jesus insists on staying the course to rejection and murder. Carry your cross, Jesus says. Do it every day, he adds. Suffering, death, self-denial, letting go of something you love, food, game, or a show, for 40 long days, or perhaps for the rest of your life. How could we not be tired? How could we not be discouraged by that prospect? Because God saved us and called us to a holy life, not according to our works, but according to his own design and the grace bestowed on us in Christ Jesus. Though we are easily discouraged, we are reminded that we are not left to our own designs. This self-denial, these crosses, we are not left alone to carry them. And Peter rejects the idea of the cross because that is the natural way to respond. What he, James, and John see today, what the rest of us see today, is meant to show us the supernatural way, the only possible way to survive death and self-denial, the only possible way to meaning and to joy in this life and in the next. It is the wisdom of the church, the divine wisdom of God's providence, that places the transfiguration before our eyes now, near the beginning of this solemn journey to the cross. Such is the wisdom that should guide not only this journey of a few weeks, but also the journey of our entire lives. Moses and Elijah appear there with the Lord, the law, and the prophets, key representatives of the Old Testament, to act as witnesses, and you need two witnesses in Jewish law, two witnesses to what had been foretold, a newer and greater prophet, but also a man who would suffer for the people of God. And Jesus warns that he has to fulfill these prophecies. And he uses words and symbols to teach his apostles and disciples about the cross. And suffering is a tangible reality for us. It does not take much convincing for us to believe that suffering happens and will continue to happen. But escape from suffering, glory, joy, and hope that do not fade, these are things we want to believe, ideas we want to be true, but realities that are easily doubted. And it is for this reason that Jesus knows it is necessary to reveal his divine glory before the cross. While the apostles' hearts are still laden with the heavy words of the cross, they are given the vision of glory. The cross is promised, but divine glory is made manifest. Can you blame Peter for his reaction? It is good that we are here. It is good. A vision of the divine is exactly what his heart what your heart longs for most. Every sweet food, every fond embrace, every time you reach out for some fleeting or even harmful fun or pleasure, you are reaching out for what Peter has just glimpsed. I will make three tents. Oh, Peter, we've all been there, wanting to prolong that precious moment, to remain in that second of joy. Sometimes it is like this one, a moment of profound peace and spiritual contentment. Other times, it is returning to some creaturely comfort and looking for the same excitement we got with the first glimpse, the first taste, the first experience. At its best, this desire for more becomes dedication. At its worst, it can become addiction. What you want, Peter, we want. But none of us can have it while still on this earth, even standing on the mountains of prayer, or perhaps the hills of a little fun. The pain of coming down that mountain might make us wonder if it is worth it, if perhaps we should just wallow in our lowliness and misery until the end to avoid the disappointment of coming back down. Should the formerly successful artist never paint again? The struggling musician never compose? Should the heartbroken never love again? No, we need moments of exaltation, and especially spiritual moments given to us by Christ himself, by God himself. The door of death will close on everything and everyone. So we need to peer through, to peek into that keyhole to see the light on the other side, the glory beyond the door that is unlocked only with the key of the cross. That is the beauty of the Transfiguration. It is not just a sign of the future, a symbolic foreshadowing of the resurrection. It is that. But it is also a manifestation of glory now. Contrary to popular belief, the Catholic faith is not all about perpetual postponement, all boredom and gloominess until we finally die and escape and go to heaven. Yes, we ultimately look forward to heaven and to the life to come, but we experience some of that glory here and now. Bright white light emanates not just from heaven in the Transfiguration, but from Jesus' very body. Even his clothing becomes like light. By God's power, the light of joy and peace can shine through this physical world. That is what we mean by beauty. And even natural beauty can strike the heart and raise the mind to God. It is so much more true with the gifts of grace. So make your sacrifices and offerings. Let them hurt a little, or even more than a little. I promise you that God rewards such sacrifices, and that if you let him lead you up the mountain, he provides moments like this Transfiguration to strengthen you when you need it. Perhaps some of you can recall right now your own moments of profound prayer, of recognizing God's glory in some powerful way. But yes, those moments of clarity do pass. Even the sense of accomplishment and joy after a fruitful sacrifice, after finally kicking a bad habit, that will fade. God can and does stir up our emotions with amazing moments. But we will falter if we count on emotional highs. A fun youth group, clever teachers, great music, powerful sermons, and even a beautiful church. None of these will sustain your faith if they are not connected to and indeed completely subject to Christ himself. Because when tragedy strikes, an early death, the loss of a long-time job and your retirement, betrayal by someone close, there are no gimmicks, no trite platitudes or superficial structures that help. This is my beloved Son with whom I am well pleased. And every Mass we can gaze upon that beloved Son. Do we learn from those moments, from the moment of the Transfiguration, to delight in Jesus Christ and not in passing things? That is why the Mass is meant to be filled with reverence, sometimes in great beauty, pomp, and circumstance, other times in humble silence and awe. This celebration of the Eucharist, and indeed all of the sacraments, are moments when Jesus comes to touch us, to say, "Rise and do not be afraid." And they saw no one else but Jesus alone. There is only one thing, one person who gives you the strength that comes from God so that you can bear your share of hardship for the gospel. Even when the light fades and the glory dims, Jesus remains with the apostles. He remains with us. Be grateful for the moments of glory and light, for they are real. But seize upon their true meaning. Even with the experience of the Transfiguration, 2 out of 3, James and Peter both flee the cross when it comes. The noise of fear and of worldliness struck it from their memories. So do not squander your own moments. Turn off your screens and radios to allow God's grace to really take root. This is my beloved Son. Listen to him.